Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Pub Table Racers, edition number 57.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's counting? Where, when'd you get past 50?
Yeah. It's kind of like a year. We're a year plus in
years. That's it. Who would have thought we would have lasted this long? My name is Tim Packman. Sitting next to me from Team Penske, the winners at Bristol Motor Speedway, the Cup race, the one and only.
Warren Brosell. I don't know if I'm the one and only.
Well, you're the one and only. As far as I know, that's good. Okay, first of all,
I was working on a 21 car yesterday.
Right.
In case I had to go over the wall.
Sure.
AARP came and stopped by, make sure I had my card before I jumped over it. I didn't. Everything worked out good. I was not helping out the 22.
Okay,
but
got it. But you're still,
part of Team Penske, right. So and happy for them boys. Absolutely.
So guess what? Warren Brosell, why? Do we have a bucket of Miller High Life sitting in front of us?
Well, because this is Pub Table Racers, and we like to have a few beers while we chat with our guests, and also because we were Bobby Allison, he's our hero, and our buddy, and this is his beer of choice, so it's ours.
Okay, so let's toast Bobby.
Let's
toast your win.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Cheers.
Cheers. I have to drink, otherwise some of your buddies get mad at me. First one of the day. That's my dad saying. All right, so coming up on tonight's show, we're going to get dirty. We're going to talk about Bristol, the Cup race, the truck race, get your thoughts on it, talk about that for a little bit, and then we're going to have 10-time ARCA champion. I'm like really honored this is going on today. Frank Kimmel's going to join us, and I think that's huge.
Yeah, this is
pretty good.
In his series, he's definitely a legend.
Yeah, 10 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him about what he's done and what he's up to now. He's working at DGR Racing. We'll talk about that. But before we get going, we got to take care of our people, take care of us.
Take care of them.
That's right. This show is brought to you by Lake Norman Patio and Game Rooms. Go see Brad and JoJo. And right now, you're looking out your deck. The weather's getting nice. You're like, man, I got crappy-ass furniture out there.
Spring is in the air.
Spring
go get some new furniture.
So's the pollen. But anyhow.
Yeah.
So that's it. You go see him. Pool, patio, deck. He has it all.
Game room quality.
The game room. You want a pool table. Foosball. Thank you. Bubble top hockey. What is he? Has guitars,
sports memorabilia,
and if you're a Star Trek fan, he has a Captain Kirk signed shirt that you might want to stop in and get that.
Right.
Go
Shatner.
See him, Shatner. That's it. Just turned 90,
and he uses a CPAP machine.
Okay, thank you very much.
I see that on the commercial.
Okay, good. I didn't see that. Thank you. Who else takes care of our show? We'll take care of them. Warren, behind you, we have RacingJunk.com. Thank you. buy, sell, trade. Anything you need for automotive, whether it's cars, motorcycles, hats, shirts. Race cars, buildings.
Soup to nuts.
Everything from the roof down. How's that?
Yep.
Use one of yours. So go check them out. Good partner of ours. And the Garage Shop, thank you for Aaron Brown and those guys. They help us out. And we help them out. And the Garage Shop Insider Podcast. And we did another episode last night with Donnie Allison. Go check them out on YouTube. And next week, next Monday, we have Dave Marcus as a guest. So it's kind of cool.
On Garage Shop.
Not on here. On the Garage Shop, yeah. No, let me get on the Garage Shop inside.
Yeah, that right. Straighten that out. We do have a guest coming here Tuesday, but really,
KB Belmont.
It's one of Frank's.
It's archetype.
Arca buddies, his son, KB Belmont.
Yeah, and we also want to thank our Rapid Removal, Darren Russell.
Yeah,
you
posted that for.
We just saw that. Thank you. On our Facebook page promoting tonight. His logo, he just got the phone number, so we just put that up. 20-yard containers, they can get them in tight spots. Removal of debris, construction. You want stuff all the way?
Right.
Just
won't tear up your yard.
Won't tear up your yard. They tuck it in, leave it there, and haul it out. So there you go. Let's take care of that. Don't forget, also, check out, you want some merchandise. Because people want merchandise. We have those lovely tumblers.
We still have tumblers left.
Tumblers.
We have hats.
Hats. This is the white one. We have the black one. And we
shirts.
Have these lovely t-shirts. We are out of the gray.
We are out of these.
We're on the last one. And we have these lovely koozies that our former guest and friend Kelly McMahon makes for us. Not for us.
I don't know if she got her water heater fixed. I was going to, if she really needs one bad, I could probably help her out.
Okay, got it.
I was going to send her a message.
Yeah, because you're helpful like that.
I don't know if she's listening or not, but.
All right. There you go.
Water heater.
Oh, my God. Look at Mark Gangloff's here. Tom Mount Legend. Zoanne Good. Aunt Steph in Florida. Denise Stokes Hall. Hey, love your show. Great. Little Johnny Trailer Trash. You wanted the best. You got the best. The hottest band in Lake Norman. He's going to let me do that intro one day. One day, right? Then we're going to sing Detroit Rock City together.
Love it. I'm not.
I ain't not you, but I'm Well, come on up. Check us out.
I sing Stand By Your Man like the Blues Brothers.
Perfect. Also, if you're tired of our ugly mugs and you want to listen to the show, we're on, what are we, Spotify?
Apple Podcasts.
Google.
Google Earth. You put me on the spot.
All kinds of, yeah. So
you're not IT.
Carol just said she's not getting her hot water heater fixed. So if
she's not?
She did not get it
fixed. I'll send her a message tonight.
So see, we're here to help. Look at this. We even do stuff like, he does. So when Warren says I do all this stuff, a couple weeks ago he informed me he's just the pretty face of the operation.
Well, I said I'd like to, sit here, drink beer, tell jokes.
And that's funny. That's good. And that's your contribution.
It's your job to get us on Spotify and Instagram.
That's right. Damn it. And you know what? Did it. All right. Let's talk about, want to bring Frank up?
Let's do
it. Let's bring up Frank and talk about Bristol.
Yeah.
Let's
do it. He's raced right. ARCA cars.
That's right. Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, 503 ARCA starts. 80 wins, 10 championships, and also he did 14 starts in Camping World Truck Series, 1 Xfinity, 7 Cup. He's even promoted races. He's now at DGR Racing. Ladies and gentlemen, bring up Frank Kimmel. My gosh.
Yeah.
Come right up here.
And a lot of guys in the garage right now today have come through his shop.
Yeah.
In fact, I heard a... I didn't tell him this, so I put him on a spot a little bit.
Well, so you sat down.
I'm riding at a racetrack with Greg Irwin, and we hear the young man from the 99, the crew chief, Travis
Mack.
Travis Mack, yeah.
And he gave a big shout out that when he worked for you. That he learned some dirt stuff and how he was a car chief and they did really, really well this weekend.
Man, that was a great run. I was texting at the end of the race and I was really proud of him and Daniel never no dirt experience whatsoever and get up there and lead with the he put it on him for a while.
Right.
There was
actually and I was gonna ask you, Travis, I think found a little bit of an edge.
Yeah.
And they showed it on TV.
Okay.
About Daniel's throttle trace and how he was monitoring his throttle and
go pad.
I don't know if Travis learned that from your ARCA dirt.
Travis has learned a whole lot since me, so
he's been around a little bit.
But when he worked for us, you knew he was going to do
this
a
better thing
because he just he's very driven and really wanted to do well and worked hard and comes from a great family and it was great. We've had some really good young men come through our ranks with when Bill and I had our own race team.
Yeah.
So let's go. So how does Frank Kimmel from Jefferson, Indiana?
Jeffersonville. Actually, Clarksville.
Clarksville.
That's okay.
Did you take the last train? Anyhow. I had to say, I had
the monkeys.
So, where did your beginning interest in racing come from?
Well, it all started with Dad. My dad started racing, I think, in 1947. Was at the local track and didn't know anything about racing. As his story told us, that he was driving across the bridge from Louisville to Southern Indiana, which is we lived literally right on the Ohio River, pretty much, and. His buddy was coming the other direction, pulling an old race car behind his truck, and he said, they simply stopped in the middle of the bridge, which you can imagine, and he said, where are you headed? And he told him, and he said, well, turn around, Bill, come follow me, and Bill went to the racetrack at night, and the next week he had one. So he
seriously, ready to go. That's it?
And had no idea what he was doing.
What kind of car was it?
What
division was it?
I don't even know. Probably jalopies or something. What they call it?
1947.
Yeah. Some really cool like 1934 Ford Cooper or something. That'd be
one horse chair,
thousands of dollars. And he tore it all to hell.
So he went. He said, "Okay, we'll do it." So then, thus began Kimmel's and Ray.
Yeah, that started it. And through the '60s, he would race 4 times a week on the local dirt tracks.
That was way back then.
And make a living at it, and work out of a shop there in Clarksville, and. I was born in 62, so I was still pretty much a baby through those years, but I still remember being in the shop every night. And then
what were your duties?
cleaning.
So everyone has the same answer that clean.
It was cleaning. Stay out of the way. Cleaning. And don't shine the trouble light in my eye. Yeah. Shine on the
park. He had a little bit of a temper, so dodging, mentions and stuff. Yeah. And but we learned a lot from him. Dad was an excellent mechanic and very much ahead of his time when it came to getting the race car to handle. And that's what made him so good in those years. And so that's the part of the race that I enjoyed was working on the cars and never dreamt that we'd get there to actually drive and make a living at it.
When you grow up young doing that, helping your dad, and this sticks in my mind. I knew what a 9/16 wrench was and a half inch before I even knew what that was on a tape measure on a scale. It was just 9/16. Yep, that's when this, that's that one.
I remember Dad wrote down the firing order to a small block Chevy back in the day, and he handed it to me. He said, "I'm going to ask you in about an hour what that is, and you're going to tell me." And okay. I still remember it to this day.
What is it?
1-8-4-3-6-5-7.
When you challenged me. No. When you said, "I remember his day," I was like, "Yeah,
to this day, yeah." I can't remember what I'll have to use Garmin to get home or whatever was on my phone. But I can't remember what I had for supper. But I can remember stuff like that. My wife says it's selective listening.
And there's 100 people. There's 100 people watching. Went, firing order. Yep, that's it. That's our crowd.
I didn't because I can't remember the firing order. Okay. But I remember some other silly something about it.
At what point did you all of a sudden go, "Okay, Dad, I've been helping you. I want to get behind the wheel."
Well, I was helping a good friend of mine, Joe Least. He was actually dated my sister Jamie, and he was in Bill's class in high school. Bill's 5 years older than I am, so they were older, and Joe worked across the street at the marathon station, Craft Marathon, and so he started piddling with a race car and wanted to come and help us and be a part of the whole deal, and so I started helping him work on his car, and so at like 15, I wasn't even supposed to be in the pits. Back then, they were more strict about that than they are now, and so at 15, I was snuck into pits and was helping Joe, and Dad was racing his late model, and Joe let me go out and run the first his heat race and drive it that time. And I'll tell the worst part of the story.
What do you do?
Drop the green flag, drive off in the turn. I don't know. I probably started on the third or fourth row, and I shoved the clutch in instead of the brake. It was big. They knew I was in the race when after I powered through to about four of them. But we come in, beat the fender back out, and went back on the racetrack and finished the race. So
that was your first
experience. It was big.
Okay. And then from there, you obviously learned to get a little better.
Yeah, I just dabbled with it a little bit because Dad was really big into that school was first, and he wanted us to play sports, whatever we wanted to do. So I played basketball, not very well. Played football, not very well. But I tried hard, and those always came first. And then, so I went off. We went to Indiana University Southeast to college. And
what'd you take?
I was going to be a school teacher, and I didn't finish. The best thing that came out of college was I met my wife Donna.
How'd you meet her? I like to hear these stories.
Well, I tell you, she chased me down. No, that's not it. I'm sorry. She was, I'd actually met her when we were seniors, when I was a senior in high school, and she had actually she was a year older than I was. And a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, Larry Ragland, was trying to go out with her, and she wouldn't have anything to do with him. She had a boyfriend at the time. So a year later or so, I met her, and I saw her again in college. She was, her sorority was one booth, one little cubicle away from my fraternity. Right. I was a Pike, and she'd walk by every day and just break my heart every time she walked by. So I finally got enough nerve up to ask her out, and she probably should have ran, and she would tell you that, but it's 36 years back.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, exactly.
Racing, did she have any knowledge? Any?
Nothing.
Perfect. That's the best. Let me mess up your life. Here's how it's going to go.
I kept warning her about it.
You know what 9/16 is?
No, she doesn't. And she doesn't care. That's not her department.
That's perfect. Good.
We were at a little, actually, it was a track in Owensboro, Kentucky, racing, and Jeremy Mayfield and the Green Brothers and Michael Waltrip and Daryl's, that home area.
That whole crowd.
And So Donna's up on our little open trailer that we had, and she's got our lounge chair and our little, and she's got her thing of tea or something, and she's got a book she's reading. And one of the friends that was helping us, his wife was out there checking air pressure, doing all this. And somebody said, Donna, why don't you go out there and check that air pressure and stuff and help? And she said, I think I'm here more like a statue. And she's kept that policy. So yeah,
that's
okay.
Great. That's great. Yeah. That's good. Dave Bysham said, Frank, you are the biggest fan of my family in northern Minnesota.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. So then where did you start? When did you start?
Through that, I was going along there and just dabbling in street stocks and stuff that I could afford at that point, which wasn't a lot. And I had another good friend that I'd met. He worked at U-Haul, Buddy Rauch. And Buddy, for some reason, took a liking to me. And he said, you know, you ought to try to move up. So he got me a ride in Donnie Lois late model. And Donnie had a really good late model, and we stuck three throttles that year.
About what year is this one?
Probably mid 80s, I'm thinking. Okay. 82, 83, 84, something like that.
So is this like an all pro car, or?
It was like a late model. I mean, it was a straight rail, you know, kind of similar to the late models they have now. Of course, set up completely different.
Asphalt or dirt?
Asphalt.
Okay.
And Donnie and I ran for about a year together. And then during that year, Buddy was a good friend with Dick Schroeder, who owned Sea Lion Engineering. And Dick was dabbling in building race cars, too. So he said, hey, Dick said he'd help us build a car if you want to help build it. And we'll put one together, and then we'll go up. And Charlestown had a late model division that was somewhat economical, if there is such a thing. And there's a big story to this. We built this car from scratch. It Sea Lion Engineering built it to run Charlestown Motor Speedway, and
just there.
We could run other places with it, but that was our goal, because it was on Friday nights. It was close to home.
Yeah, and back then the rules were so different per track.
Exactly, it was
it was hard to take a car and go somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Buddy and I get this car done. A good friend of mine, Dave Worrell, still great friends of ours, built the motor for me. So we put it all together, and we're ready to go, and we're broke. I mean, flat broke. And
were you working a job at this time?
Yeah, okay. Probably.
How did you fund what you were doing?
I was working at Kimmel Auto Parts, which we had started an auto parts store like in 81 or 82. Right. So we were making probably $50 a week, something like that, and just trying to, get by. Yeah,
just killing it.
And so we get this car done, and I'm broke. And Don and I think had just gotten married, and I needed to start a credit line, because Dad's always big, and if you can't afford it, you can't pay for it, you know. Yep. So I went to the local credit union, talked to Mrs. Happel, and said, I need to borrow $3,000. And she said, what's it for? And I said, well, it's just a personal loan. I need some stuff around the house, blah, blah, blah. And she said, Frank, I need to know what are you going to spend this on? I said, Dad needs a cosign. He said he'd cosign for me if that's what you're worried about. No, I know you're good for it, but I need to know. And I said, well, it's for a race car. And she about died. She goes, why did you tell me that? I said, well, you kept asking. So, but if we went to the racetrack broke, we'd have been terrible.
So did you get?
She gave me the $3,000. We put it in the bank, and we spent a little bit right off the bat. We burned up a clutch. We bought a clutch at an auction, and it wouldn't last at all. So we finally, that was our big purchase with that money, and then we started winning. We went to Charlestown and won, four of the first seven races.
So do you remember that first win? What it was like to pull in a victory lane?
You know, I really don't remember the first late model win. That's kind of strange.
Tired.
That's a good question.
So damn tired.
Yeah, I was worried about tech after that.
Oh, why is that? Like?
Yeah. I don't remember that either, but I'm sure I was worried about
tech. Oh, yeah, there you go.
It was built under the. We built the rule, over the rules that they were laying on the floor.
Perfect. All right, so you're working on. By the way, the story about the credit union. The reason I was laughing is my dad did the same thing when he was racing. He said it was for some things around the house, and that was like months later. He said, "Yeah, I financed the race car through the bank." And of course, we're in a small town.
Right.
And,
someone told
the bank, and like, "Hey," and I was like, "Yeah, got it, buddy. Paid it." That's why I was laughing. So
as long as they get their money back,
yeah, I don't care. I don't care what
it's for. It's pretty cool. We won two championships in a row at Charlestown, and really did well, and paid the money off, and and then after the second year, we were able to. I took Red and Buddy and Donna and myself, and we all went and watched Davey Allison and Bobby Allison coming off of turn four for the Daytona 500.
Nice. Bobby
beating.
Really?
Yeah. So that was really a cool time. And
so you were a fan in the stands?
We I think we rented a Chevette for that, like, and we went to some stroke tracks, and I'm sitting in turn four.
We had those,
Yep, and we were standing on top of the Chevette, and I'm sure we destroyed the roof.
That really something else happened to it.
So when you're 1988, you're watching from the infield.
Yep.
Not knowing that.
Never dreamt that we would get an opportunity to do that.
You would one day be on that track.
Yeah, so an interesting thing happened. So in 88, we got done with that car. 87 won the 87 championship at the end of the 87. And during that winter, they put the car in a car show. The champion's car gets to go in a car show in Louisville. So we did that. And Terry Shirley, a gentleman from Seymour, Indiana, bought the car for me.
Okay.
And he saw it at the car show. He liked it. He wanted to run the new Louisville Speedway. It just opened.
Okay.
And so
and this is how it goes, too, because I've been involved in these situations where the championship car gets to be the someone wants that thing bad.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it was such a good car, such a fast car. And so Terry bought it, and Terry owned a Shell station in Seymour, Indiana, about 50 miles north of where we live. And a pretty interesting story here. His shop was the Munning Brothers shop. The Munning Brothers were the people that owned Mike Eddy's cars.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Remember when Mike Eddy ran the brown 88?
Yep.
It was a Howe car.
It was a Howe car.
But it all came out of Seymour, Indiana.
So in that time you're talking about, I'm racing ASA with Mark Martin, Jimmy Fenning, and Bobby Allison.
There you go.
And with the G&G Trucking Miller American car. So, yeah, I know that car well.
Yeah. So... Anyway, so Terry buys the car, and Terry is the hardest working man you have ever wanted to meet. And he's working himself to death at the Shell station. Then at night, he'd come home, and him and the guys, the Sean and John Boyd, all of them would go out and work on the car. And so about mid-season, he wasn't having a lot of luck with it. And it was strictly because I'm sure he was exhausted. And so he said, "Hey, would you come over and drive this thing one night and see if you can help me?" Well, I think we won the fast heat that night, and it was like third in the feature, which he was excited, ecstatic about it. And so he said, "Let's go to Owensboro tomorrow night and run it again."
I said, were them all pro races then?
Or no, it was just a late model.
Okay.
Just a late model class. And so we took off and went to Owensboro the next week, and or that Sunday, and was taking the lead and got put up on the fence and drug everything out from under the bottom of the car and destroyed this thing. And so I went up and helped him that week to get it back together, so to fix it, and I started driving for him.
Perfect.
And that was my first big break, for sure.
Did you tore the bottom out of it?
I went up and helped put that together.
So we have a guy named Tom Beatty. He's out of Clifford, New Jersey. He's like he's our number one fan.
Cool.
And he always has these funny good questions. He says, "Since you won the ARCA championship 10 times, do you have your own parking spot at all the tracks?"
Yeah, it's out there in the crew area where everybody else is. I say to every racetrack for us.
Right next to mine, Tom.
I'm outside thumbing my way in. All right, so when did the ARCA race?
So after running a couple years with Terry, and we won the championship at the Louisville Speedway in 90, and during that season, Jack Wallace, who did all the decals and lettering for me and my dad for years and years, was a great guy. He actually did it the old-fashioned way with a paintbrush.
Oh, yeah. We gotta explain this. So back in the day, you used to see cars, and the guy would actually paint the letters on
beautiful
stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so Wally had an ARCA car, and he was a one-man show, and ARCA had kind of outgrown the one-man team at that point. And
so If you ever call him Frank, he's not going to answer, so
don't. I thought I put it on silent. That just tells you.
No, it was me, but my dang iPad was ringing. I got this on mute.
Did you blame me?
I got this on mute, and the iPad's going on.
You know, you win races.
I know. I'm
popular.
I
know. Gosh. Go ahead.
So, anyway, so Jack just said, hey, Frank, here's this car. Go race it. And gave us the race car. And he knew that Terry could afford it better than he could. Mm-hmm. And Terry had people helping. And we had a great group of guys from Seymour that would work on the car every week. And so we ran it like once in 90. And couldn't really do a whole lot just for the fact that we were racing for the championship at Louisville. And then next year we ran it three or four times to keep my rookie status. And then 92, Terry bought a car from Cale Yarborough, Pontiac. Okay. And we ran that on all the speedways, and then we ran Wally's car on all the short tracks, and that was the year we won rookie.
So you had
two cars and
when
two
you went, when you went full time when you went full time in ARCA?
Full time.
You had two cars.
Yeah. So you can't take a Daytona car and run Atlanta with it. No. You're not supposed to. Right. And we did. So
you didn't change the fender.
Right.
No, we strictly ran the thing just the way it was, and it was a great year. We had a lot of good times.
Who was your sponsor then?
Oh man, we had a lot of. I mean,
your first ones that were
back then. We had Grammer Industries, who's a trucking company out of the area. Mm-hmm. Actually, had Papa John's for a few races.
Wow, really?
Indiana Steel, Bill Whittemore, who was a competitor. Papa John's, John Stoddard, went to Jeffersonville High School.
Okay.
The same year I did at Clarksville High School, and I didn't know him. But we kept bothering him enough and shamed him into finally helping us.
look how crappy his business turned out.
How many carry out pizzas can you do, right?
Right.
Enough to do.
Yeah.
And what's the one pepper cheese?
One pepper. Couple. I don't know. So how long was it in ARCA before you started winning?
Well, it was about 4 years, and finally won a race for Terry and his family, and it was at Toledo, which is the first race that I ever went to with Wally. Was at Toledo, right. And so that was a tremendous night. Now that one I remember, and I remember Donna couldn't go, and I called her when I got out of the car, and told her. She goes, how'd you do? And I said, we won. She goes, no, you didn't. And I said, yeah, we did. So that was
like,
real.
Nice.
Man, no, you didn't.
I got nice to him this week now.
But so we won that race, and then I don't think we won another race for another year or so. And then Terry was just working his butt off and spending way too much money, and just couldn't keep it up. And Dave Marcus had called him, speaking about Dave earlier.
Yeah.
And asked Terry to be his crew chief. And so Terry went down there and went to Asheville and became his crew chief. Terry felt bad about leaving me. I said, Terry, you got to go.
So
I understand this.
We're also right now, we're in our sport, the roaring 90s, I'll call them. You know, there was a roaring 20s for you know, our
American
country.
History, right?
And then in the 90s, this all of the stock car racing world was booming.
Yeah.
I mean, booming.
Yeah.
So, you know, and this is kind of what you're saying with money and.
Yeah, it was just so hard to keep up.
Yeah.
And ARCA started to get more and more expensive, and rental motors and things that were just getting really, really tough to come by. And I understood it and went home after the banquet thinking that, I don't even remember where we finished that year, maybe third, second. Something. And
do you remember what the end of the season payout was?
Actually, it wasn't a whole lot worse than it is now. But
they've never really been that great to these guys.
I understand. I'm trying to put things in a financial perspective. Because,
right.
Yeah. Well, I know that the first year, I bet Terry spent, when we won Rookie of the Year,
right.
I bet our total budget for the year was, I'm guessing, $100,000. And that was Pinch and penny.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you really can't do an ARCA deal. If you try to run the whole season in ARCA, probably 1.2 to 1.5 million.
Right.
You know, and, but.
I mean, what do we all say, right? Do you want to make $1 million in racing?
Start with 10.
Yeah. Exactly right. Big fortune, little fortune.
Yeah.
But, anyway, so we get done that year. I'm thinking I'm done. I'm really thinking that I'm probably going to run late models at Louisville Speedway. Okay. Can't afford to do this on my own. Understand Terry's got to go. And then during that winter, I got a phone call from a guy named Dan Faldorf out of Ohio. And it's kind of interesting. Jeff Lemons was his crew chief then. And Jeff now works for DGR.
Where
so
you are?
Yeah. We're at every day. So it's pretty cool. And
I've worked with Jeff at Ginn.
Oh, okay.
When Ginn and the DI merge thing together, and yeah, great guy, nice guy.
So Dan asked me to come up and look at the equipment, see if I'd be interested in driving it for him on the short tracks. He didn't have any speedway stuff, mm-hmm. just short track stuff. And so I went up, and Dan had an IGA grocery store that he had bought the building and. Really nice shop.
He turned it into a shop.
Yeah, he turned it into a complete race shop.
Perfect. And it's a lot of room.
Yeah, a lot of room and nice
and
stuff.
And the coolers are already built in there.
Right.
Put your beer, your
that probably wouldn't be good for Dan. I just want to say.
You're in the uppers. You're in the bread aisle.
but Dan had he had a new left-hander car and a new Hal car sitting there, and which was the car of choice on the short tracks, and had four draining engines, two V6s and two V8s. Wow. And he said, do you think this is enough? Can you think we can do okay? I said, we don't win in this. I said, you need to fire me.
Right.
And the second race, I think I ran for him. We won at Pensacola.
Nice.
Very nice.
So,
then you're off.
Then interesting that phone call then, because we're going to run the short tracks. Mm-hmm. Well, Larry Clement, at that time, who owned Bob Hill's cars,
okay.
the 46 car, was only going to run the speedways. So Larry calls Dan and said, hey, I'd be interested in doing a deal. We'll run 46 on both cars. Mm-hmm. You run the short tracks, I'll run the speedways. Okay. And they put a deal together. And then, so we finished second in the points that year, in the owner's points.
Got it.
Drivers, I finished like eighth because I didn't run all the races.
Right.
But Larry, the following year, Bob was,
so you didn't run all the races as a driver.
Correct.
How tough was it to know?
No, that's not good. That's not good. I didn't have to go to the racetrack.
Right. There were so times you're not running, but you want to be out there. You're a driver and you want to drive.
Yeah.
And you like know that you're not going to do those races.
Yeah.
But you went.
You're still pretty
well. I had to go.
It's not like you just blow it off.
No,
like,
sure.
I think I attended every race, and what it was is I'm pretty high in the driver's points.
Right.
So a couple of times I drove Frog Hall's car one time.
Yeah.
I drove another guy's car.
You know, you're trying to win a championship.
Yeah, just trying to keep my name up far enough.
Yep.
So where I'm valuable the following year.
Gotcha.
And so anyway, during that winter, Bob decided to come here and work. He told Larry Larry, I just can't do this. I think Bob was in his early 40s then. He said, I need to start thinking about making a living and take care of his family and stuff. And so Bob came down here and went to work, had a very good career and being a mechanic and a shop foreman down here. So Larry calls and said, hey, I got a couple speedway cars. I got a Daytona car. I've got two or three motors, and I got like $200,000 in sponsorship or whatever it was. And he said, you can have it all and just go racing and we'll see how long we last.
And he
sent it to Dan Faldorf in Ohio. And so that year, I think we ran second in the points to Steele and owners and drivers. And then,
at what point do you turn to finish in second?
A lot, especially to Steele. I mean, Tim was
a guy of legendary.
He was a hammer for a while.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Very fast.
Was it number 16? Was that his name?
16, HS Dye, which is Harold Steele Dye, which is his
red car. Yeah. I remember the car.
It just all came back when you said that,
He was extremely fast everywhere. I mean, he was our benchmark, and we tried to get there a lot of times, but we fell short a lot. But the following year, Dan decided to pull away from. We went to Atlanta. We went to Daytona. Finished pretty well. Went to Atlanta. Sat on the pole. Finished like, I don't know, third or fourth. And then on the way home, Dan said, "Man, I've got to do something else. I got to take care of business at home." And he said, "I can't do all this traveling and blah blah blah." And so we moved everything to Louisville. And Larry said, "That's fine." And we had a sponsor named Dave Emery, Right Way Grinding, Saw and Tool. phenomenal sponsor for us, and as a family sponsor for me and my brother Bill, and he just was a great guy. And he had I think it was 1,800 square feet or something area in the back of his shop. He said, "It's not very big, but you all can have it."
1,800 square feet. Yeah, y'all take it.
Well, it was there.
We'll make sure.
It was great, right?
Daytona. We talked about what was like your first time when you got on the track at Daytona.
I was a nervous wreck. I was driving for Terry, and you know, you hear all the stories, horror stories, and the track was rough then. You know, it's not like it is now where it's so smooth. But I remember going out, and Terry was nervous wreck because we had one motor and it was in the car, and so he had it jetted up high, and he had the timing knocked out of it. This thing was not going to blow itself up, you know. And so I go down the backstretch, and I hit fourth gear, and I swore the thing was starting to slow down going backwards. And I thought, man, you know, here comes turn three, and I'm looking up, and I'm thinking, if I can't hold it wide open now, I'll never be able to do it. So I think I put my left foot on top of my right foot and held it down and went through the turn. And the first time it was scary, and the second time it was a little scary, and then about the third or fourth time, I thought, the hell, it ain't gonna wreck now, so let's go.
Perfect.
It was a fine place.
Scary for me, just in a rental van. I do. You know what I mean? Okay. I don't know if I could. People don't realize how narrow that place is.
Oh, yes. Yeah, very narrow.
And it's a centrifugal force that you have to be going so fast.
I mean, when you take a rental van or a car on that track to leave, and you're driving there, you're like, these guys are four wide here.
And like, you know,
I ain't doing that.
I didn't like doing that either, especially in your place. I bail on those.
Jimmy Fallon says, who in ARCA was the toughest to race against? Jimmy's a local musician.
Oh, yeah. I know Jimmy very well.
That's why he's on. He knows
your guy. Painter guy, yeah.
Yeah, one of the best national anthems that we have is when Jimmy gets to do it. So, great guy. Of course, Kenny Schrader was a huge competitor and mentor, and learned so much about racing with him. But Steele was really tough. He, you know, of course, Schrader was always tough to beat. Al Geyer, as he was growing up and coming through there, he was always tough. And there's just been a lot of
You probably watched a lot of these younger Cup guys come through your ranks.
Right.
Right. And because you're staying there, and but you know they're on their way up.
Especially when they come in with
a big team.
You know, Ryan Newman would come in with the Penske cars, you know, and you know Ryan was
their agenda.
You know, it was very interesting, and I think they helped me a lot more than I helped them, honestly. And because I'm not so proud that I won't ask questions, and you know, I'd go to their crew chiefs and say, hey, you know, you're all done racing this year. You ain't coming back to ARCA. I need some help, you know.
Right.
And they would inevitably, everybody was really, really friendly. And, you know, I think they appreciated that, you know, I'd race them hard as I could race, but I wasn't going to wreck them. You know, and they felt like they could trust me. And
Their technology.
Oh, so far.
They would give it back to you because they were on their way out.
Well, and, you know, people all say, don't you hate when those Cup guys come in here? I said, yeah, they're going to beat us, but that gives us an idea where we need to be.
Right.
And, you know, and some of them, sometimes we run with them. And, you know, Kyle Busch came in, and holy smokes, that kid was fast, you know.
I saw it earlier,
He was on a bicycle.
He either won a wreck. There wasn't anything in between. I learned a lot from watching him and being around him. And, There's been a lot of good racers come through and people. Joey Miller we had a good competitive battle for the championship 1 year, and he was fun. And Bill Baird was a good guy, always race hard. And Bob Schatt was somebody that
when I first started.
I mean, that to me, that had to be maybe a little bit upsetting, but also very, very fun to watch the Cup guys, these younger Cup guys come through, knowing that they're going to be. You know, like Ryan Newman, you said.
Yeah.
And Ryan's a great guy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan's an awesome. He was probably
funny,
a great kid.
Funny side.
I can tell you a story about it.
Go ahead.
You know, you get asked all the time about what's your biggest moment in racing and everything. Mine inevitably had to be being invited to IROC.
That's right.
Yeah, and that was a really cool deal. First, I guess now at this point, the only ARCA guy that was ever there, which was really cool, and Jay Signori and his wife, they were awesome. So good to me, awesome people. But So first day, I'm in total awe. You know, here's
the best name off.
Yeah, the best.
I mean, Mark Martin's on the pole.
Yeah.
Sam Hornish was on the outside. Okay. The first night of practice that night, the Cub guys don't even come to the practice early practices. Right. They didn't care. They've been there, done that. That night, I went out to dinner and with Max Pappas and Sam Hornish. I'm thinking,
wow.
My wife called during dinner and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm having dinner with the guy that just won the Indy 500." And this guy that comes from Formula One, I can't barely understand. You know,
great guys.
Oh, great. Max and I are still really good friends. So,
and that's good because you're winning races and championships, and you're still appreciative and in awe of
being
around. So it's not like, "Hey, I'm Mr.
Right."
You're like, you appreciate it. So
good. Anyway, on this story with we're at Daytona. We do driver introductions, and like I say, Mark Martin was on the pole. And I think it was Sam Hornish or one of the sporty car racers from the outside.
Sporty.
Then myself, and then somebody else, and then right behind me was Newman. So we pretty much got introduced right beside each other. So we're walking down through there, and he said, "Well, what do you think, Frank?" And I said, "I don't know, Ron. I'm just happy to be here, but this is pretty exciting." He said, "Well, hang on." I said, "Well, really?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Because going into three, I'm going to knock the shit out." I said, "Do what?" He said, "You haven't never seen anything like this." And I said, "Really?" And he said, "Holy smokes." He said, "This is bumper cars at 180. And I said, "Okay, well."
So at that point, your mind's going, "Okay, you know,
here we go." You know, and he didn't lie. He hit me going into three. And then I ran up and hit Mark Martin. And I was too dumb to get on the brakes. I said, "Well, you know, this is the way they're going to play." And Mark's waving at me. I'm saying, "Cal Newman, no, I didn't mean to do that."
They're playing behind you.
Yeah, it was quite.
Make a phone call in.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Tony Stewart won that year.
Okay.
So Andy Belmont says
that's a great story.
Andy raced.
Oh yeah,
Arquette.
Great race. Yeah, they know.
Very good race.
He says, "Great Deke to see you on the show. Why don't you connect with one of the top writers and do a book of your life?"
Well, I don't want to put everybody to sleep. Andy.
No,
he does that.
I've written a couple books.
That's cool.
There's a guy named Bobby Ellison.
Well, Jeff Lemons went to work for Andy after Jeff went his separate ways and Andy was a good racer. You're talking about somebody fiery.
Andy?
Oh my goodness! Yeah, he wasn't afraid to tell somebody what he thought about him. It was fun.
All right, let's biggest tussle you ever got on the track.
Oh,
give me one. The one I think memorable.
It's probably in a late model or something like that because the Arca deal was so different because you had to be so, you know, you had sponsors and stuff.
Right.
I think the most famous tussle, and it really wasn't a tussle at all. Ty Dillon spun me at Toledo leading late in the race, and I was upset about it, of course,
sure.
We had Jim Johnson, who was from Menards there, and I'm sitting in the corner in turn one after the race. I don't know where we ended up, fifth or sixth or something, and frustrated and mad, but I wasn't going to say anything because you just got to stay away. Ty comes down into turn one and does two or three victory donuts. He ended up winning and goes back the other way, and boy, that made me mad. So I was really aggravated at that point. So I walked down Pitt Road, didn't say anything to anybody, I was actually the first one to his car, and he stopped, had the motor shut off and everything, and I took the window net down.
You were just helping him out.
Yeah, exactly. He had the flags sitting there in the door, and when he did, I just picked it up and threw it on the hood. Everybody made a big to-do of that. I mean, I thought that was, and his crew by that time got a hold of me, and I said, "Guys, I ain't hitting him. I just want to talk to him," and I just asked him. I said, "How do you celebrate when you win that way?"
Right.
You know, I get you're happy.
Right.
You know, I get it, but you didn't win it.
Right. You didn't race for that win.
And I don't know that he quite understood that. And he was young and whatever, but, it was pretty famous. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, everybody thinks the bump and run is...
It's not racing.
It's not racing.
And that it was... That wasn't Dale Earnhardt's move.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. Yeah. I mean, really there was times, but...
But, right. But that's not... To me, you know, I grew up in the Midwest. Mark never did that. You know, I worked for Mark. He didn't do that.
Right.
You know, Matt Kenseth.
That's the easy way to do it. I mean,
Matt and Joey did have some issues, but that was another issue.
Right.
Yeah, but Trader and I race against each other.
Yeah,
so
you don't have to.
You don't have to run over people.
Right.
You know, be man enough to try to pass them, and if you can't, you run second.
You race for that. You don't
race it. Now, if they start running you all over the racetrack, that's something different. But,
yes.
You know.
There's a difference between that and if you're being blocked repeatedly, then you're going to get that problem.
Ryan Clark said, something I noticed with Frank was that he did a really good job getting the kids involved in the track, inviting them into victory lane and for photos. He said that was quite generous for the time. He says, what is the story of your favorite chassis?
My favorite chassis is Mabel.
Mabel?
We bought
Mabel.
It from,
We
were getting beat. We were very competitive on the short tracks, but we were getting...
What was the late model? Was
it is Arca.
Okay.
And this was with Larry Clement. Larry Clement owned a Chevrolet dealership in Iowa also. And Larry, I mean, their Fords were killing us. I mean, just beating us up every week on the mile and a half and bigger. They just were so much faster. And it was the Taurus. And so he called me one week. He said, we need to get a Ford. And I said, Larry, you own a GM dealership? He said, I don't give a shit. We're here to win, you know? And I said, he said, you know anybody at Roush? I said, yeah. And you know, Robbie was there.
The Taurus was the first true race car.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was a four-door sedan that we got to make into a two-door coupe.
Right.
That also a Taurus was front-wheel drive.
Right.
And we used zero stock body panels to make this car.
Yeah. And it was
And it was the beginning of the end, I will say.
Yeah.
Because it was no longer a stock car.
Yeah,
and I'm a Ford guy, and I love Fords, but I'm gonna go back to that and say
the changes.
It was a uncomfortable time.
When I went to
go ahead.
So we called Roush and talked to Robbie and I said, man, I need a car.
Robbie Ryder?
Yeah. And he said, well, we've got one down here, and I'm gonna be honest, Mark just drove it at Phoenix. He hates it. And he said, don't ever bring it back to the racetrack again. And he said, but I'm telling you, Frank, there is nothing wrong with this racetrack. He said, he just don't like it. He said, but it just came off the racetrack at Phoenix. I don't even know, probably $35,000 back then, which was a pretty good price for a car that up to date. And,
that's a roller.
Yeah. I mean, it was, no motor, no transmission, no seat. So we come down to see it, and Bill and I walked in and looked at it, and it was sitting there. Raised the hood, the old lines were laying on the ground. Oil had run on the ground. Whoever pulled the seat out left all the bolts and
just
laying in there. It looked like crap. All the rubber was still on the car. But
they got it home from the track, stripped it, and said, "That's it."
But all the front suspension was still safety wire.
Okay,
Had all the steering box. Everything was still connected the way it was when it left the racetrack.
So that was a huge crash panel.
Everything was still there.
Yeah,
and so we took that car home and. We went to, I'll make it quick, went to Kentucky Speedway for a test, and I had a Chevrolet that we had gotten from Everham. Ray's another one that had treated me very well, and it was a good car, and we roll out, we're really fast, the car was really good. Come in, and Joe Ryan, who was doing our motors then, had built me a Ford. We took the tires off the Chevy and the shocks off the Chevy, put it on the Ford, and I got in the first time, went rolling out, run 6-7 laps, whatever it was, come in, and Bill said, what do you think? I said, drive's really good. I said, I think it's going to be fine. He said, well, you know how fast you're going? And I said, well, I'd say it's pretty good. I said, but, you know, there's plenty left. He said, well, you're about 3/4 second faster than you were in a ship.
That would have been a Monte Carlo, not the...
It might have been Lumina.
It would have been. You're right.
It would have been Lumina. But it was so much faster, and I wasn't trying. And that car, I don't know what its winning record was. I still have that car. When Larry and I split, Larry allowed me to keep that car.
So was that a Roush chassis?
The Roush car.
Or maybe not their chassis. Probably a...
It was a Roush car.
It was a Roush car.
And how long did you use it for?
Not a Banjo.
About 3 years, probably.
Okay. Who the heck were we getting all the chassis from? Everybody was getting the same one.
I don't know. It may have been a Laughlin.
It would have probably been a Laughlin with a Roush body.
Okay. Such a good car. So much faster than anything we'd ever driven. And then we started being competitive.
So you won all the championships. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. At what point did you think we're going to win our 10th championship league?
Well, that's another hope story.
But you had a, like, it never gets old. We know that. But well, you had to be like, oh my gosh, another championship. I mean,
well, I've always been a points racer, so that's always your goal. And every year in ARCA, it was a different set of circumstances. I mean, you had, you know, for years we had Steele that we had to try to beat. And then you had, you know, Andy Belmont and those guys would come in and they're trying to win championships and they were running good. And then Bobby Gearhart would run the full season.
Mark Gibson and all that.
Just everybody. So it was, but then during that time, then you'd have somebody like a Joey Miller come in and run some races. And then you'd have, you know, Damon Lust that would come in and run really well. So you always had different circumstances. So it wasn't like you were really running the same people every single year.
Different cast of characters.
Ty Dillon would show up.
Yeah.
Actually, he might have built that car. I didn't want to go there at the time. Yeah. I might have helped on that.
I mean, Chase Elliott ran the whole year.
Had a left rear quarter panel that wouldn't fit in this room.
So Chase Elliott, he ran Arcus.
Yeah. And so, but then, actually, when Chase was there, you know, that, from, I don't know what year, my last championship, 90 or 2008, something like that, I guess. And, then it was 3 or 4 years, and we didn't win a race in the mid 2010, 12, 15, 13 is when I went to 12 and 13. I think I went split with my brother, which was really tough, really hard decision on what to do, and just felt like I wasn't ready to quit, and he was really ready for his son to start driving, and so we just had to part ways, and that was tough, and then. We actually come down and talked with Andy, talked to a lot of Joey Coulter and his family and about coming and racing for them. And nothing seemed was really going to work out really well. Actually, Jim Johnson from Menards calls and said, have you had any luck? And we kind of filled him in on what we were talking about. He said, have you ever talked to ThorSport? And I said, well, they don't do cars. They do trucks.
Right.
And he said, yeah. He said, but, you know, Matt Crafterman's our ad there, and we're really tight with Duke Thorson. And would you mind if I called him on your behalf? I said,
heck no.
No.
So yeah, I'll make that call.
Just 2 or 3 days later, I was actually.
You still on that building?
Drove up to Sandusky, Ohio, and walked through their brand new shop they had just got done. A beautiful place. And sit down with Duke and Rhonda Thorson. They were just really, really good to me. And David Pepper and. I kept telling them, I said, guys, you know, I know what my sponsorship package is, and I know it's not enough for here.
Right.
And they said, let us worry about that. You go out and win. I had, I think, 7 races to break the record. And honestly, the 80 wins was more important than 10 championships.
80 wins. I mean, 80 wins. That's huge.
Yeah, 79 was the number. See, that was Iggy Katona.
Right.
That's the most.
Oh, oh my, there's a name. Yeah. Holy crap.
And that, wow. You know, hero of mine that raced against my dad in the 60s. And, so yeah, that.
So you're pretty much the Richard Petty of ARCA.
I don't have a cool hat. And,
well, you're still Frank Kimmel.
I need one. Right. I'm pretty bald.
So but you're the number one.
Duke and Rhonda and David and all of them up there and Jared Prince and we had an A team ARCA bunch for sure. They put me in, and it was funny because you always get the question, you know, you haven't won in 3 years, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, well,
go on, race again.
The excuses have stopped.
Yeah.
I said, I now have the best race car on the race.
Yeah.
So either I need to get it done
right.
or I need to get away. And fortunately, we were able to win up to, I think we won 7 for Duke and Rhonda.
Yeah.
And that 80th win, that was one of those nights at Kansas. We got the championship pretty much locked up by just going on the racetrack, and a couple of guys that were really going to be the strong competitors wrecked out, and our car just kept getting faster and faster, and Jared made a great call, and we pitted early because the weather was coming, the thunderstorms and stuff were coming, and he said, I don't think we can make it to the end, but I don't think it's going to go to the end. We're going to get rain, and he said, so just go out there and do what you can, and we ended up cycling to the front, and the car was just going faster and faster.
Very nice.
Pretty cool.
You know, I gotta say this. So, I've been, this is weird. Paul Menard and I have almost followed each other's career back and forth.
Ditto.
Paul comes to DEI. I'm at DEI. He leaves. I wasn't with him at the Roush Everham stint, but then I'm at RCR. He's there. Then I'm at Penske, and he's there. And, you know, Paul and I are, we're not like friends, right, but we're good.
Right.
We're good acquaintances, and those are really good people.
I'll tell you what, Paul Menard is about as first class guy you want to meet.
Him and John Bo.
So I work, I did PR for him at RCR and DEI, and to be around him, you would not know that.
That he's a billionaire.
Whatever, but he just plays it so cool.
It's so much fun to go. I do some autograph sessions in the stores.
Yep.
Did a bunch of them. And when Paul would come, you know, it was great because as soon as the line got empty, Paul said, "I think we're done." Paul said, "We're done, we're done."
Paul Menard says, "The Menards, we're done."
We're sitting there, and I'm signing autographs one time, and Richard Childress was here, and Paul was there. And when Childress showed up, the lines were huge.
Yeah.
I've never seen so much Dale Earnhardt stuff.
But
this manager leans down to me. He said, "Excuse me." He said, "Is that guy over there in the black?" He said, "Is that John Menard?" I said, "Yeah, I think it is." He said, "Oh shit!" He wanted to make sure that shop was clean. He did not know he was coming.
Oh no, John runs the same way. He's just very
smart. Oh yeah, John don't even know. Right, you don't even know it's him. He's got New Balance shoes on, and
that's it. He looks like him and Johnny Morris, the Bass Pro Shops.
Paul and I had a little joke. I would always tell Paul when he'd get in a wreck, I would say, first of all, if you're fine, when someone say, "Hey, are you okay in there? You gonna be fine, Paul?" I said, "Paul, please, one time for me, say, I'm a billionaire. I'm going to be okay." And he's like, "I can't, Warren, I can't say that."
All right, we have a couple minutes left. Now you're fat. Okay, real quick, you promoted. You got into promoting one time?
No, we actually did a few street stock races.
Okay.
And
the biggest one was at?
Well, the first one was probably had the most press. We did, I don't know, four or five, maybe six at Rockingham.
Right.
Did a couple at Bristol.
And these were street stock races.
Street stocks.
And there were guys in the sport building Joey Meyer. Well,
yeah.
They were building cars to get
into it. Yeah, Ellich had one.
Yeah, they're like, "Yeah, I can get into that." Yeah.
It all happened. I was at Toledo or Talladega. I went to watch the dirt race that night at the little track. And the street stock feature was the best night. The best race of the night.
My favorites.
They were four wide, not beating on each other, doing a hell of a job. And then I had an appointment. I had to do a deal at the Hall of Fame the next day. So I get over there and I'm walking through the museum, which if you've not been to the museum at Talladega, go. It's very much worth it. And so I'm walking through and I'm thinking, these guys were idiots. You look at some of the cars that...
Oh, the safety.
Oh, my gosh.
Terrible.
And I thought, you know, the street stockers that we have now are much better race cars than what they had back in the day.
Right.
And I thought, you know, that's a shame because those guys over at Talladega, those street stock racers have been doing it forever. Some of them are kids or whatever. They'll never get the opportunity to come over here and are at a big track. So I had some really good friends at Kentucky Speedway, and I talked them into letting us do a test. And we had a race. I think we had 86 show up, and we started them all.
Nice.
Jeez.
If you get another thing, it's on YouTube. It's a hell of an event. And
I bet.
It kind of took off. We ran it a couple times at Kentucky, like I say, a couple times at Bristol,
right.
And it was pretty cool.
Cool.
Okay.
Nice.
Now, so now you're done driving. 2016 was your last, right?
I guess.
2016.
Well, for now.
For now.
But, you know, now, we thought Bickle was done driving too, but.
Yeah, we thought Bickle was done. Boom, he pops up. Let's go to the air race.
Hey, let's go to Daytona.
Right, Daytona. Let's start fourth. I mean, geez, that's fun. That was a blast. Right. They had a good time. Now, we're looking at your shirt, DGR, David Gillen Racing.
Yep.
What is it? How long have you been working there now?
Well, my wife told me that when Holly had a baby, my daughter and son both went to school down here. My daughter went to Belmont Abbey, and my son went to UNC Charlotte. They graduated, and they both decided to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So Holly got married, and her husband is a head aerial engineer at JTG.
Okay.
And Christian does a really good job.
What's his name?
Christian Salent.
Okay.
Really good young man. And anyway, so Holly decides to have a baby, and Donna said, "I don't want to be an absentee grandma." So we packed everything up from Southern Indiana, and we moved down here. And
so you moved down here when?
About 4 years ago now.
Oh, so the whole time you were racing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
you were doing remote.
Remote
yeah.
racing,
yeah.
Well, compared to others here.
Right.
So anyway, I went to work for Brad Keselowski, known Brad for since he's a baby.
On the truck deal.
On the truck deal. I was kind of a talent search guy. for okay. him. And then when he decided to shut that thing down, by the way, Brad was phenomenal to work for.
Great guy.
Everybody that worked for him, I think, will tell you that. And I think he decided to not have a trucks the next year in like September. So he didn't need me at all.
Right.
And, you know, I was employed all the way through the end of the year. He said, you're part of the team, and treated me very well. Okay. Anyway, so then I went to work for a couple of years at the Venturinis
right.
and had a good stint there. Won a championship with them, you know, working on, I wasn't a big part of the deal, but I think I worked on the lift cars there. And, and then
you're a roofer. You know everything from the roof now. Yeah. Again, it's
every show you slide in.
Well, I got it because it's like when you have this much experience
and talent and knowledge,
and right. you're going to be able to help with everything, not just you know
or screw up everything and one or the other. So
now, I mean, as a driver, we talked about when you had you did the whole ARCA schedule. How tough was it for you to get out from behind the wheel and then work on cars, knowing that they were going to the track and you weren't.
This racing now is so different.
Okay.
Real quick, I want to finish up. I went up after the Venturini thing. I went to KBR, a gentleman out of Mike Bursley from out of Michigan, had started a team and he had it running out of GMS. COVID hit, you know, killed his racing dreams. It was terrible, but hated it for him. But Mike Bean treated me great at GMS. I didn't work for GMS. I worked out of their shop, but he treated me like I was an employee.
Was that the Jordan Anderson thing? No.
No.
These were late models.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. He was renting space at Nice there.
Yeah, right. And so then I contacted David, and I'd heard he needed some help and went over to work and been there now for this is my second year and really, really good people to work for.
So what is it you do there?
I work, last year I was on Haley Deegan's car, and I don't know whether you want to call it car chief, mechanic, I don't really care, it doesn't matter what you call it, but, and then this year, she moved up, I didn't go, I don't have to go to the truck deals, I shouldn't say that way, I don't get to go to the truck deals.
You already said it,
right? You're actually pretty decent.
She is a racer, I'm telling you, I really believe that she gets the opportunity.
And she can do it.
She can do this.
A little bit, she's learning as she goes.
She's okay. Very good, but anyway, so they put me down to the Thad Moffitt ARCA deal, and it's been good. I worked with Derek Smith now, Derek's the crew chief, and I worked with his brother Seth last year, so they're twins, by the way, and I can tell the difference in them now. At first, I didn't, I'd say the wrong name
half Smith.
The time, which is pretty normal for me. That's back to hitting things too hard, you know.
You guys need a name tag.
That's why I asked him, I said, you need to put some kind of bowl on or something. So I'm at the shop every day and really, really enjoy it, and then get to go to the races and going over the wall a little bit now.
Okay,
so that's I enjoyed these half-ass pit stops that we have. So I'm perfect in half-ass.
So as someone who competed for so long and the championships and the wins, and you know the greatest, let's just call it the greatest in America.
Just was there a long
time. You can be humble. We'll let you know.
We're gonna say we're going fast.
Yeah.
Do you like sit there sometimes and like this kid you're working next to? Does he? I hate to say this, but I hope he knows who you are.
Yeah. Did he get it?
Okay. I hope. Do they get it? Frank Kimball.
I was actually a little nervous you coming here because I never met you.
Well, you were nervous I wouldn't find it.
Well, I was nervous because I never met you before, and I got a lot of respect for you.
Well, I appreciate.
Well, when you said yes when I met you, I was like, shit, we got Frank Kimball coming on, and I mean that sincerely.
Well, I actually had one of the drivers asked me one time, so did you used to race? And I said, yeah, a little bit. I thought it was kind of funny, honestly.
Wow.
But, no, it's...
come here, kid.
It happened. Okay, I'll give you a quick
the worst story about any of that...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you go first.
We were at Pocono.
You go first.
And we were sitting there, and a couple of the young drivers were sitting there talking to me about whatever. And David Pearson come walking by.
Okay.
And I said, boys, we probably need to bow. I said, that's one of the best that's ever been.
Oh, sure.
And they said, did he used to race? I said, get the hell out of here. I said, you ought to be made to take a test. That's bullshit.
This shit is a history test, right? Yeah. I get on an airplane.
David Pearson.
I get on an airplane. The kid aero engineer gets on the airplane. He sits down next to Paul Menard.
Okay.
Okay, this is our Penske plane. He says,
right.
"Hi, I'm so and so. What do you do?"
Anything I want.
Paul says, "I drive a plane."
That's exactly like Paul.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Well, Paul isn't like that outgoing.
No, no.
Everybody, I'm here.
I told Paul afterwards because I'm watching this all go down. I says,
"Wow."
Just said, "I'm a billionaire." I like that line with him. He hates when I say that to him.
Sure, of course he did.
He is.
No, that's good. What do you miss most?
Probably the actually getting in the car and racing it.
Yeah, I've
always enjoyed just doing that. I'm getting my fix on working on the cars. Mm-hmm. I've always loved working on race cars, and so I get the opportunity to do that in a beautiful shop like the DGR, and it's air conditioned and the floors painted. You know, it's a lot better.
More than 1,800 square feet.
Oh yeah, I got elbow room. Although he's got so many damn cars in there,
I've been there a couple of times. Like, where are they? Yeah.
Oh man. It was such a beautiful day today. All the guys from the dirt trucks had them outside taking
them. I saw the picture on social media. They were you can see the dirt. And you can see around everyone, there's like dirt on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Real quick, what did you think of Bristol? We didn't really get to it because we just launched into you.
Yeah,
what did you think of it?
I thought it was great. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you go to these perfect racetracks and the tracks are really smooth and everybody gets on the bottom and runs around there. That's good racing and speed. But it doesn't make great racing. And I thought this weekend, we saw racing throughout the entire field. Yep. There was problems. The track was coming apart. But, I mean, you got to give the people credit at Bristol.
Right.
You take problems. A makeshift facility.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's not really made to do what they're trying to do with it. They bring in dirt from different players.
2,300 loads.
Yeah, trying to just make it stay down. And then you've got two of the heaviest race cars in the world.
Yeah.
And you got to run them both in one day after you've had a monsoon.
Where the creek was flooded, you couldn't even get in.
Yeah.
So here was my outtake on it. I think they should get with the owners and do a survey with the crew chiefs and say, how much weight can you get out of them cup cars?
Right.
Because we're too heavy for that.
I don't really know that weight's a big problem. I think it would have been two different days racing.
Yes. Right.
Their truck race was excellent. I mean, it was rough and it got dusty and everything, but it was a good race.
So my outtake on it was a little bit better tire.
That's what I think.
A little bit better track.
Yeah.
And you got a lot better dirt race.
Sure.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm sure they learned from this weekend.
Exactly.
For sure. And now it's going to stay in there for a year because we're going back, apparently.
Well,
spring, you're going to take it all off and put it back down again.
I think they need to do something with the cooling. And I said it before. I actually talked to Dave Gillen. I said, man, you need to lobby with ARCA and let them bring air from the top grill. You know, they mandate your openings and stuff, it's in the bottom grill. Well, the bottom grill gets packed,
right?
Especially when the track's heavy.
When it's wet, yeah.
And
I see what you're saying, yeah.
So they just let air come in from the top grill. That would help a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe do something with the windshield. I don't know if they would ever race without a windshield. Ooh. But
yeah, that would be tough for us.
Yeah.
But going back to
maybe a windshield wiper of some sort that would help.
Right. Swift got a lot of mentions this weekend.
It's so funny because I tell them all the time. I tell the guys, I said, you need to get you a duster to get inside the car. And they look at me like I'm stupid. I'm thinking, I'm telling you. Kevin Harvick was in our shop, you know, getting in our truck. And I said, Kevin, we're going to have you a Swifter or something down here beside you. Right. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, under caution, you're going to be knocking that dirt off.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
We never got hot. I was on 21. We never got hot. We did pack a little bit, but we had that outerwear on, and the stuff doesn't really stick to it.
Right.
But to your point, you know, of moving the opening up, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody says, you know, when you look at a dirt late model, they don't have any grill.
None.
They don't have no ductwork. Right. They don't have grill screens. Right. It's all just behind that nose.
Manual fans.
And a manual fan. Right. You know what I mean? Can we do that?
Well, we run manual fans in ARCA
on
the dirt tracks, and virtually have no trouble. That's where they need to go. I'll lobby for Bob Sargent is the promoter that does the dirt races for ARCA.
Bob is really good.
Great guy, and I've told him forever, I said, that's where the cup need to be. They need to take them to Springfield.
Yeah.
Big mile, dirt track, big wide.
Yeah,
oh, beautiful.
Be perfect. Real quick, last question. People want, when you're all, I always ask this, years from now, I said, man, Frank Kimmel as a racer, he sure was filling them up.
Full of crap. No.
That's fine. No.
You're making Howell into blank?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's his life.
I think just be known as a racer that did it the right way.
Got it.
And I felt like when we raced, got in the car, we weren't going to embarrass ourselves too much, and right. We weren't going to embarrass our sponsors, and right. We were going to try to get the best finish we could with that car that day.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'm going to say it like this. My respect for you is that you talked tonight. You didn't have to go out and fight.
No.
You didn't. I want to put. You weren't an ass.
As a 10-time champion?
I'll bring my wife next week and she'll allow me.
That's at home.
None of us got that.
But as a 10-time champion, you could literally walk in and go, hey, man, I'm here.
Right.
You could be that way, but I just don't.
Whenever you start feeling that way, somebody will walk in with a race car sure. and just beat your ass right. and tell you that you're not that good.
Exactly.
And then you take some of that humble pie home with you.
Absolutely.
We have a question from Christine Sadowski. Hey, Warren, did you mention about your Bristol experience? If you're talking about away from the track, we have no idea what you're talking about. We don't talk about that. There was one picture.
That's another show, guys.
Right.
Hey, Frank, I want to say honestly, sincerely, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you
very much. It was my pleasure meeting you tonight. It's our pleasure to have you here.
That's good.
Thanks all.
Shall we?
Let's shall.
Thank you, everybody. Good night, Dick.
Good night, Dick.
There you go.
They're talking to me.
Wow, hey, another great show. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning
Enjoy
in.
It.
We appreciate it. We do this every Tuesday night, and Warren, I think the guests we've had have been fantastic.
Phenomenal.
And the people that are following us, we appreciate it. We're reaching 42,000 people a month. Can you believe that? And we appreciate you watching.
Right.
And
we're having fun. Hope everybody else enjoys it.
That's it. It's just a fun show. A bucket of beer. Guys sitting around talking about it. So keep tuning in. We appreciate it. Check out our store and everything. But we appreciate you people, and we will see you next week, right, my friend?
Yes, sir.
All right. See you next week.